Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I am your host, Monica Hadley, and with me on the other end of the line is my mother and co-host, Caroline Kilborn.
Hello, everybody. It's a beautiful day here in Iowa, and I hope it's a beautiful day wherever you are.
Well, it's a beautiful day here in Austin, Texas, too, which is where I am today. And, Mom, why don't you introduce our guest today?
I'd be happy to do that. Our guest today is Melissa Ferguson, best-selling author, and this book is called The Perfect Rom-Com, which means romantic comedy. And that it is, and it's the most interesting book, and there's something interesting in here that I really am anxious to find out about, and so she's going to explain all this, I'm sure. So we get started and let it happen. Okay.
And Melissa lives in Tennessee with her husband and children in their growing farmhouse lifestyle and writes heartwarming romantic comedies that have been featured in such places as The Hollywood Reporter, Travel and Leisure, Woman's World, and BuzzFeed. And some of her earlier titles include Meet Me in the Margins, How to Plot a Payback, and On the Way to Christmas. Welcome to Writers' Voices, Melissa.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited. This is my first time doing a reading for this book, so this will be fun.
Oh, fantastic. So has the book been released yet?
Yes, it released last Tuesday, I believe.
Okay, so that would have been in February, towards the end of February. Mm-hmm. And so kind of Valentine-ish season.
Yeah, very much. That's how they've definitely been promoting it. I think it might even be at Target under that shelf right now.
Okay. So, Carolyn, why don't you ask the question about what you're so curious about?
Well, I'm curious about this writing where you're...
Part of the plot is ghostwriting, right? Yeah. So
yeah, one person is taking the credit for having this book, writing this book, but somebody else is writing it. I mean, I don't understand that.
Oh, yeah, like ghostwriter world. Yeah. I've written another book for somebody else, a nonfiction, but I made the choice. I said, I do think it's fair for readers to know that it's from me, even though it didn't really matter. So we made sure to put my name on it, but they definitely were like, you know, do you want to just be a ghostwriter and keep your name off? And I said, no, I'll keep it on. And I have friends who are ghostwriters themselves, and it's super interesting to me, because that's what I wanted to do in this book, is deal with the dynamic of, you know, how you would feel with, you know, writing books and not getting any credit for the words that you've created.
That's what bothers. I guess it bothers me, because It sounds like, you know, you work so hard, and then also you have in this story you have a book of your own that you want to get published,
right?
And you're having trouble doing that. And if you can write this other one, and I don't know, I know the publishing world is beyond me, but.
Now the Writers Conference, which is where this book begins, is a fascinating world. I've been wanting to write this story since I walked inside my first Writers Conference back in 2015. And I went to my first pitch session, and it was exactly like this. It was so crazy. And I sat down with my first, you know, you have 15 minutes. You spent all your time, energy, money, resources. You know, it's your super dream to talk to one agent, and you have 15 minutes, and there's a timekeeper walking around telling you, you know, you got 1 minute, scoot out. And then they just sit down and they very casually say, you know, like the first time I went, my book was 145,000 words. And he very casually did say to me, cut that in half, you know, and then come back maybe next year. And it's like, you know, what an easy thing to say as an agent possibly, but what a devastating thing to hear as an author, aspiring writer. It was like, hey, maybe wait a year, cut this out in half. Maybe you get a chance to have another meeting. Maybe it's not even good to cut in half. So I loved writing just the ball of nerves and the tension that comes from being in a room with all of these other aspiring authors and all of their agents that they're trying to reach in that beginning scene of this book.
Now, did you cut your manuscript in half?
Well, you know, it worked out that, you know what, I think I did cut maybe 40,000 words from that book, but I happened to win a, at the end of the conference, they have a conference-wide writing contest that you could have submitted your book to early, and it turned out I had won that. And that was a saving grace for me because I was shocked because I'd been turned down by everybody unanimously for 4 days straight. I was wearing my three-month-old. I had twins at the time. They were 13 weeks old. And I was wearing my 13-week-old son in the back with my husband back there. And we were just waiting to, like, leave. I was very dejected. And then sure enough, over the conference, they started reading the words from my book as the winning. And then I got a check and went to the front. And then sure enough, of course, agents came up and they're like, hey, you know, we'd like to revisit this. We'd like to talk with you. And that really changed my life. So that's where I was able to get an agent. And I had to write a couple more books before I got my first book deal. So it wasn't the first one that got picked up.
Okay.
It turned out to be rom-coms that were my niche, not speculative fiction, which is what that was.
So this is a little autobiographical then, the perfect rom-com.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, it was, I went on my first book tour last year for How to Plot a Payback. And so that was illuminating on like the crazy life of driving hours and hours and hours, going to these packed book tour experiences and hours and hours and hours. And of course, I was thinking about in this book, I'm thinking of someone way more popular as a writer than me. Amelia is like, you know, your great villain. She's like your modern day Emily Henry, if Emily Henry was a villain.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Jacqueline and Suzanne or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like really, really great. But I thought, oh, that would be so interesting. What would these scenarios look like? So it was fun to write a book tour.
So explain why Amelia Benedict needs a ghostwriter.
Well, I actually know some people who, when they are, I mean, think about some of those authors who are prolific writers who just seem to have a book come out every, how are they doing it? How are they this successful, planning their tours, doing, you know, marketing on social media, whatever, and then somehow have these amazing bestsellers come out every, like crazy, right?
Right.
And I think the reality is some people use ghostwriters to make that happen, because you hit a point just like with Amelia where she loved being a famous author, but she doesn't love or particularly necessarily have the talent for the behind the scenes writing and the hard work. She's really good on camera. She's really good with that marketing publicity side. But half of the job of being an author, if not more at this point, is the marketing and publicity part. There are so many books that are written. Like, what is it? 2 million copies are written a year, maybe. So how do you get that book?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you – are published even. So how do you – so the problem isn't how do you write a book. The problem is how do you write a book that readers will find. And so Amelia had that notoriety to her. She had the famous aspect from her basically her history and her family history, but she didn't really have the self-control to sit down and write the story and nor the desire for it. So what does she do? You know, they're just in the business to make money, right? The publisher is just like, we don't care how it happens. Slap her name on it, get the book out. And when they discover Bryony turns out to be such a wonderful writer for them, that they're like, whoa, let's hang on to her. So it adds that really fun kind of 2 weeks notice twist.
Yeah. Right. So do you think it's pretty common that they're using ghostwriters without acknowledging them?
I mean, it definitely happens. I don't know who. I mean, I know of a few who are ghostwriters, but I don't know who is and who isn't, besides the few people I know. But yeah, ghostwriting is a a well-known thing, I think, in the industry. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of still a secretive thing, though. So, you know.
Yeah. I know there's – I'm trying to
yes,
think.
Yes, I would think so.
There's a very well-known author, mystery suspense writer, who uses not exactly ghostwriters, but he partners with other writers. And he gives basically the basic plot, and he gives notes and so forth. But he definitely acknowledges the other writers that he's working with. So part of course, part of this is that it was so secretive.
Yeah, and I would be curious, you know.
James Patterson, that's who.
Yes, yeah. I knew that was who you were thinking of. He's well known since he has so many books come out, and that's cool. He's able to help authors, aspiring authors, find their way by doing that. So that's a bit different, but I would be curious. I've never Googled like who are well known ghostwriters. I bet you there's a list of people. I just didn't look that much into it.
That's so when you decided, I find it interesting that you went to this first writing conference 13 weeks after your babies were born, your twins were born. Why would you choose that time to do it?
Oh, well, I mean, it kind of was the perfect time. So before I had done that, so at first I was an ESL, which fits for this. I was an ESL teacher for adult immigrants and refugees.
Which is English as a second language. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that, I did that for a few years. And then when I moved, I became a youth director at a YMCA. So the kids would come in middle school and high school, and they would come, and I would lead all these programming for them. And that was super fun. It was super social. And that's what I love. Is doing being really super social. So then I had my twins and was not in that job anymore. My first children, I actually didn't have any friends at that point. So I wasn't plugged into MOPS or mom groups or, you know, it's like, you know, it was a very isolating time. But I had been writing for, oh goodness, since I graduated from my seminary with a master's degree in 2011. So I had been doing that for about 4 years. And then I'd been querying agents online with no success. I mean, I queried so many. I read so many articles, did the podcast. How do I do this? How do I form this letter? How do I gain their interest? And I just received rejection after rejection after rejection. So suddenly I have twins. They're at home. I have nothing else to do. I
mean, except take care of twins.
Nothing else to do.
Come on. And I have 4 children at this point now. And but at the time, all I did was take care of my kids and nothing else. And so I wasn't having adult interaction. So it was kind of a good time for my husband. And I was like, I would really like to do this. I'd like to finally go to a conference and meet an agent face to face, which is where I wrote that opening scene where it was like, we packed up our twins and drove through the night because that was when they slept. And I rolled up at 7 in the morning with zero sleep and went to my first pitch session. And so it was chaotic, but it was worth it.
Wow. Well, why don't you read that scene for us?
Okay. The beginning scene. I would love to.
Yes.
Okay. Can you hear me all right where I am?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I have a daughter playing a piano in the background, and I didn't know if you could hear. I was like, oh, no. Okay. Let's see how this goes. Wow. I truly have, like, never read my own books. This is going to be really interesting. And I'm so used to Marissa Vacker is the audiobook narrator for this, and she just did such a stellar job that I know I'm going to be like nothing compared to her. But here we go. It was a dark and stormy night. I mean, not technically. Technically, it's actually remarkably warm for a January afternoon in Nashville, Tennessee. Men and women of all ages are practically skipping down the sidewalk on the street below, twinkles in their eyes, hope in their chests. Just a moment ago, I watched from the three-story glass wall of the conference center as one stuffy-looking businessman actually dropped his phone call to commence sharing crackers with a squirrel. Crackers with a squirrel! Having a little lunch together on a green bench while taxis and tour buses flash by, windows down, hair in the breeze. Everybody in all of the city is basking in the unusual sunshine, learning life lessons, having existential breakthroughs, except for me. No, I, 29-year-old Bryony Page, have the distinct pleasure of my mind crackling like a thunderstorm while I pace outside the conference pitch room on my final day of the American Society of Writers Conference, awaiting my final pitch appointment that will determine whether the past 2 years of writing my heart and soul out was life-changing or, in actuality, a complete and utter waste of time. And then, of course, there's my sister on the other end of my phone with her own particular brand of trying to help. It's your last day, Bryony, Gloria says in my ear, a nails down the chalkboard kind of twang in her voice. You just have to buck up, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, slap that book on the table. Proposal, I interject, pivoting on the thin hotel carpet. A manager in the distance is frowning mildly at my legs, looking like he's calculating exactly how many times I have to pace this exact path before I wear a hole in his carpet. And get back on that horse, because you're going to have a rootin' tootin' good day, you hear? This is it. I pinch the bridge of my nose, trying to ease the tension. On the bright side, I'm not hyperventilating. Hyperventilating is what the man to my left is doing as he exits the pitch room and collapses onto the first bench he finds. Neither am I crying. Crying is what the woman to my right is doing while another conference attendee is shaking her by the shoulders, telling her to pull herself together because she has, according to the clock above the door, 30 seconds before she's up. No, what I'm doing is getting my pre-pitch pep talk. The same pep talk I've received from my sister the past three pitches over the past 3 days I've been at this writer's conference, 900 miles from home. Only as each day has gotten progressively worse, the rejections have piled up higher and higher, and the stakes have risen to dangerous levels. The pep talks have grown weirder, longer, just worse. My sister Gloria, dignified court reporter in the courtroom, whimsical adult child every moment out. I know what she's doing, though. The harder she sees me struggle, the more absurd she gets. Some people's love language is baking casseroles and sending letters. Hers is providing distraction, even at the cost of throwing on a Big Bird costume and dancing down a congested hospital hallway, waving streaming blue ribbons, i.e. during our friend's 7-year-old daughter's recovery from tumor removal. And right now, without question, she has at least 4 tabs open on her phone on websites about Southern slang, while she grasps at straws for any sort of distraction from these tortured few minutes before my last and final pitch. Is that a good short little intro to this book?
Why don't you go just a little longer?
Okay. Not to mention, she found it raucously funny that I called her from a line dancing saloon my first night during a, quote, meet and mingle. Needless to say, life at the conference here in Nashville, Tennessee, is a far cry from our little borough outside New York City. And to my misfortune, it turned out I did not happen to have any life-changing chats with agents while doing the boot scoot and boogie. I let Gloria continue on as I turn on my heels and pace beside the doors, taking in words like highfalutin and can't never could, and attempting small chuckles every few moments for her sake. And to my surprise, it's actually helping in a small way. Just hearing her voice rattling off anything at all, braces me. It's not fixing me, mind you, but it's stabilizing enough that I'm not getting any worse. At least 8 people are pacing in the massive room around me, all of whom are contributing to the manager's stress. Most with heads bent, mumbling to themselves as they stare at their papers. Some, like me, on their mobiles, getting their personal prep talks that no doubt don't include phrases like, there's someone for you, B. After all, there's not a pot too crooked that a lid won't fit. And as the long hand on the clock strikes 12, I feel an urge to flip open my proposal folder and recheck everything just one more time. It's unnecessary. I've checked to make sure my papers were all there and in order at least a dozen times, but I have to see. I have to confirm it did not magically disappear in the past 60 seconds. My one sheet. Check. My business card crafted on some site I'd never visited before where I ordered 200 for the sole purpose of this weekend and 197 still linger at the bottom of my bag. Check. My 60-page proposal prepared to tell literary agent Jack Sterling every single bloated thing about my life, career, and book. I don't work as an ESL teacher. I am a philanthropic academician with a bent for loyalty and integrity in my 15 years of service. I don't have a gerbil named Biscuit, my old roommate abandoned when she left me halfway through a year-long lease. I am in the animal rescue service and provide via allowing Biscuit to come to my classes so my students can find comfort in stroking his soft black fur during anxiety-ridden testing weeks. I do not have a newsletter of 46 people comprised of 25% family and 75% students. I have a global spanning news outlet with a roster reaching people from 27 countries and counting. I have 3 sample chapters. I have a pen I can gift him that has my name and email just in case he loses my business card. I have a paper clip with my name and email I can slip on my papers in case he loses my business card and my pen and my proposal and folder and all electronic receipts regarding my name and information. I have everything, down to the bandages on my blistered heels from walking miles inside these conference halls the past few days and attending classes about how unprepared I was to do something as idiotic as try to sell my book when, don't you guys know that 2 million new books come out each year? And let's not even begin to think about the destruction wrought by AI. I've diminished beneath celebrity speakers sharing their glory stories of old, writing books on washers and dryers before receiving the big phone call with the 6-figure advance. I've sat in on the marketing classes informing me how I need to run a successful website, newsletter, blog, Goodreads, BookBub, Instagram, Lemonade, Threads, TikTok, Pinterest, YouTube, X, and Clapper account before even considering reaching out to an agent because, of course, publishers can't publish books without successful authors. Never mind that it's impossible to be a successful author with a thriving platform on social media without actually having, you know, a book.
That's a good place to stop. That's right. That gives a really, I think, a pretty good view of what an aspiring author may be facing. And yet, you and Byrony both beat the odds.
Yes, we're very blessed. Those writers' conferences can be life-changing.
So now you mentioned that you got an agent out of that conference, but you didn't end up publishing that first book or the second book that you wrote?
Right, or the second. Actually, ironically enough, in this conversation, I just sent it to my agent and I said, hey, by the way, do you want to do anything with this? Because if you want, we could, you could take it and we could publish it. So she's actually looking at it right now. So we'll see if something comes from that.
That's the second one.
Yes. But I told her I'm too afraid to look at it myself because it might be terrible because it's from so long ago.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. And you mentioned that your first book was speculative fiction.
Yes. First unpublished.
And what was the second unpublished?
That was my first rom-com.
Okay.
I don't know what YA-like. So I'll be interested to see what she wants to do with that.
Yeah. So did you read a lot of rom-com? Is that why you made the switch?
I made the switch because my agent at the time said, have you considered, we bumped against, even though I won that award, publishers were really reticent to jump into publishing a book in speculative. Also, it was quasi-academic speculative. It was really cross-genre, a bit weird. And they were like, we just don't know if this has a place in the market.
So this is, it was it the same book that Byrony was pitching?
Kind of, yeah. So when I say, I mean, so when it's quasi-academic and it's a mix of all of these, I mean, that's very much what I walked in saying as well. And, you know, it was good enough. It was written well enough that agents signed with me, but to then turn around and sell it, they were just not having any luck. I mean, we had a little bit of luck with very small publishing houses, but we were so trying to be very careful just because publishers look at your sales history when they're going to offer you a new contract. And if your sales history isn't good, particularly because maybe your publisher didn't have the reach to make it great and no fault of your own, but still you're going to have to deal with that and they might not give you another contract. So I had to be really careful. And so then eventually my agent was like, have you considered writing romance? And I said, well, I don't love romance. So no. And then I said, well, I take that back. I love the movie You've Got Mail. I love rom-coms. And I said, I'll give it a shot. And so sure enough, I did get multiple offers and that's kind of where I landed. So, it's been really fun ever since.
So a rom-com obviously has the comedic element in, which a traditional romance may not. It seems like that might make it harder to write.
I'm lighter on romance than other authors. So I tend to go more comedic and almost I like the protagonist almost women fiction-y. I'm a cross genre a little bit because I really like my main character learning something deep and growing through it, whatever the message is, kind of like women's fiction. And so my romance has always have been a bit on the lighter side when it comes. So I enjoy the comedic aspect. I enjoy the How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days kind of rom-coms where it's just ridiculous scenarios that kind of make you chuckle. So for me, it works out well.
And this is also part of kind of the plot line is that Byrony is wanting to write rom-coms that have a deeper meaning.
Right.
And whereas Amelia, was that her name, Amelia?
Yeah.
Amelia, who is the face and really could care less about that.
Right. She just wants a flashy book going out. You know, she's all the lipstick. And Bryony's like, I really have a passion for what I'm doing. I really, really wanted to stick to like a twist on 2 weeks' notice, the rom-com through this, where you see in the movie, like Sandra Bullock she has an altruistic heart. She has a goal to save this community center, but she has to match up and work with this man for the goal that is so much more noble. And so the same kind of scenario hits for Bryony with Jack, you know. She has really good intentions and she wants to really make a difference in the world, you know.
Right.
I just wondered if there are a lot of people that do this, a lot of authors that have other, I mean, I guess they aren't authors because they aren't writing. But
yeah.
Are there a lot of people that have ghostwriters? Doing
well,
that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are plenty of ghostwriters out there. I've seen, and I know some who are ghostwriters for children's books, like really, really well-known children's series. I know an author who's a ghostwriter for some various adults, and that's literally what she wants to do. She gets paid to write books for other people. I know somebody else who... And another group where it's common for celebrities to use ghostwriters because they're not interested, nor maybe do they have the skill set to write their own stories. Like they can tell the stories, but they're not accustomed to writing, or maybe they don't have time to do it themselves or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I think it definitely happens. How often? I don't know.
I'm curious. You said you had ghostwritten a nonfiction book. What was that about?
Well, and I have to clarify, it was not officially ghostwriting. I put my name
on
it because I was like, I will write this for you, but I need my name to be on it. And the way that they do it is they have somebody's name on it and it says like, I forget how it is. It's like authored by the main person, written by, and then my name.
Okay.
And the way that I had to do it was... basically, I just had conversations back and forth. I kind of crafted the proposal process that went through the agent, that went through then the publishing process, and then got the deal. And then I really had to like work with her. I remember we would take long voice messages back and forth, kind of like a court reporter. My mother is a court reporter.
Oh.
So A little bit of a like, oh, you, with Gloria, the sister, being a court reporter. But like, it kind of like a court reporter, I would get voice messages back and forth with her that were recorded as we would talk through lots of stories. And I basically tried to learn as much as possible about various things. And then I would go back and write it into a format that was more of a self-help nonfiction format that worked. And then I would go through the editing process, of course. And then when it was time to publish, when that was done, it was like, okay. And then she takes over the publicity side. It's all her from there on. She does the book tour. And so that was really interesting. It was an interesting experience doing that. And also, I very much found I don't love doing that. That is not for me. I like writing my own books and writing, you know, rom-coms. And if I'm going to write a nonfiction, I'll probably would only do my own name. So people have approached me since then and said, hey, would you like to be a ghostwriter? Or would you like to co-write? And I say, no, thank you. You know,
and what was that book about?
Well, that book was a very unique book. It's called From the Ground Up, and it was about a woman who, she has the same exact house that I do, actually, house plan. She built her house, and she built, in the building of her house, she gained a large social media following, and that's how I discovered her, was when we were looking to build a house, I found her account, and I found various houses that had this house plan, and I loved it, but I was also, as an author, shocked at how many people, you know, in the author world, you're doing well if you get, like, 4,000 followers on Instagram, right? But for her, she's at 250,000. And it's like, wow, how did you do this? My publishers, or publishers in general, would like love if I had a social media account, right? So for me, what I ended up doing was I thought, you know, I wonder if I can, like, I changed my handle to Our Friendly Farmhouse, which now has over 900,000 followers. And I started creating my, like, home design, interior home, like, just life content, you know, recipes and lifestyle and homeschooling and cooking and whatever. But every few posts, I'll slip in information about, oh, also, by the way, here's my new book. Also, by the way, you can get my book in this airport. Also, by the way, you know, whatever. And so, and I realized that is such a better method for me, right? Because in the beginning of Bryony's story, you know, she was saying, how do I do this? How do I have all these accounts when I don't have a book out? So anyways, basically what happened is I discovered her. She had Jet Set Farmhouse was her account, and she had the house plan that I was interested in also doing. And I basically, she said, oh, one day I'd love to write a book. I just, we started DMing, messaging, and I said, oh, she had an interesting story. So I ended up telling, I said, I'm going to call my editor at Thomas Nelson. So I called my editor and I said, hey, I think this girl has an interesting story you guys might be interested in, not to mention she has a strong platform. She hasn't written. And she, I remember my editor saying, hold on, I'm going to go talk over to the Chip and Joanna Gaines team. This is interesting. So she reached over and chatted with them. And within a day, I mean, they were like, yes, we're interested. So then they reached out to her and she said, oh, wow, this is so exciting. But I don't know how to write a book, or I don't have time, or, you know, whatever. I've never done it before. Would you be interested? And I said, yes. So I helped her get an agent, my agent. And then I helped her with this contract. And so it was a very unique scenario because we also now have the same house, although she's moved out of that house at this point. But yeah, so it's like, I was able to, like, It was a very, very, very unique one-off situation for how I ended up doing that. But I helped her tell her story.
So how did you grow your account to 800,000 followers?
Yeah, it's I mean, I learned a lot from Noelle when I had to write her book. When she started, I mean, and I wrote it in that book with From the Ground Up. It was, here's how she basically – I learned, wait a second, I think I could probably get free materials or even possibly paid to build our house if I can showcase it on social media. So, I mean, that's what I did, is slowly, I mean, I took a page from Noelle. Noelle said, this is what we did. And I was like, that's incredible. That should be shared. That's really great content. Like, for people to know. And I really took her advice, you know, I was like, all right, I'm going to try and do that. And sure enough, it's been an incredible blessing to me. Because that's exactly what happened. And we're able to have the home we do because of social media, because of what I've learned. And more than that, it grew my account, and which helps me sell books. You know, it helps me, me be in good standing with publishers. So,
but there's a lot of people, often women out there trying to being lifestyle bloggers that never get to that level. It's not that easy to do.
Oh no. I mean, I will say persistence and being able to continuously educate yourself, being willing to continuously pivot, learn and pivot how you're doing things. But truly every single day there's effort there, there's learning there. I have been doing this every day for, you know, a period of time for years at this point. And so, there's a lot of nuances to it, and there's a lot that you learn along the way. There's a lot of money you spend initially and investing into various apps or programs or whatever, as you're like learning how to do things, create videos, filter them, et cetera. So, I mean, it's almost like getting a college education in this. And then, but it's a wonderful way, especially for me who stays at home and homeschools my kids, just been kind of the best unexpected blessing, I will say, for our family, for me to be able to stay home, but make full-time income doing this, and writing books while being able to like stay with them and have our fun little adventures.
You're listening to Writer's Voices, and our guest today is Melissa Ferguson, author of The Perfect Rom-Com. So a rom-com there's a certain requirement usually with the rom-com, which is boy meets girl, boy hates girl, or girl hates boy. And then they're forced to spend some time together in some way. Is that
right? The forced proximity trope.
Yes. And then one of them or both of them are resisting acknowledging that there's something between them. And sometimes I find that part of the story annoying because it goes on too long. There's too much. Come on. Can't you see that?
Especially because in romance, you're not dealing with like high stakes scenario, like the earth will explode. You need to get X, Y, or Z, right?
Yeah.
And so you're creating conflict that sometimes unfortunately comes from miscommunication or lags or whatever. And it's super, I agree. I think it's super frustrating when there's that miscommunication that kind of lags on.
Yeah.
Why cross genres I think are super fun. I just wrote a murder mystery rom-com, my very first, that'll go out next year. And I had a blast with that.
Well, I got to say that I didn't feel that same sense of frustration reading The Perfect Rom-Com because because there were so many other things going on that it wasn't all focused on this love-hate relationship.
Yeah. Well, and so you might appreciate it. Somebody else might hate that because they're like, it's not romance focused. Make it all about all the time they need to be having dinner together and talking about whatever. And I'm like, I've just realized that's not me at all. And I just don't. And I like quirky scenarios that are rom-com-y scenarios where you, where the focus is so much on that internal development. She's always got an external motivation that's really going, right? She is trying to save, you know, her family's company. She's trying to help these students. And so that is definitely going to take some time in the scenes. That is such a, that's going to be like 20% of the book. And then she's also got this internal growth that she's working through. I can't remember what I would call it specifically in this book, but I mean, really learning to maybe stand up for herself or learning to forgive or, you know, whatever. And so it's like, there's that aspect. And then there's the romance aspect. And then there's maybe his external motivation, right? He has his flaws that you start seeing that need to work through. And then you have the quirky scenario. So it's like, you can almost like break it down percentage wise in a scene to to where you can see those various parts. And the less you have of the comedic aspect or the external motivation or the internal flaw, the more it's going to be focused just on the romance. And to me, that's boring.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
So I like to read, I don't know what your favorite genres are to read, but like, I like books where like they're flying, you know, like go inside the wardrobe and enter Narnia. That's super exciting. I like world building. I like things like that. So it's like, Meet Me in the Margins. I don't know if you've read that one, but I wrote that one a little bit ago, and it's almost like a Narnia where it's like, there's this secret room in the turret of this publishing house, and she's writing books, and there's a secret editor writing notes in the margins back, and they're exchanging. And it's like, I love that kind of whimsical aspect in rom-coms where there's almost like a mystery to figure out, you know?
Now, do you still ever get any pushback from the publishing world that you're trying to do too much and don't really just fit into the rom-com?
Oh, no. So the nice thing is lately from my agent, it's been more of a, hey, cross genres are a big thing. That's a big trend. That's an upticking trend. And do you want to do that and embrace that? And I love that. I love not being put in a box. I love that we can, you know, I wouldn't say magical realism. I don't love stories where, you know, it's almost like, I'm trying to think of an example, like she eats pie and suddenly she's in a different world or something. But I do think that's why I wrote that murder mystery rom-com. Tried my hand at that because I thought, oh, that's interesting. And also a murder mystery, it's like you get some romance, that's fun. You get some comedy, that's fun. And you get a murder mystery to solve that's very lighthearted. I mean, my book will probably be the least intense murder mystery that's ever existed on the entire planet, I will say. And then, but that keeps the focus off of like him just staring in her eyes and touching her hand too much. You know, yeah. It's like, oh, that's not for me.
And where is it set?
The murder mystery rom-com?
Yeah.
On a ship. It's called Without a Clue. And so I'm really excited. I'm waiting on the cover art design for that one.
Now, a lot of times it feels like romance, it's particularly the romance, the rom-coms that Byrony ghost wrote in the book. So you've got these books within the book, multiple books within the book.
Right.
Often the setting is a very important part of them. You know, it's set at a tropical island or set in a ski resort or set some or.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Beaufort, South Carolina, which is a favorite of mine. She wanted to keep it in. And Amelia was like, no, let's just make it this little ski place. And she was really upset about the change of setting. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, but the perfect rom-com, the setting doesn't seem to be as big a part of it as some others, because you're in, you know, kind of a nondescript borough of New York or something, or small town outside of New York. And then, but then on this tour, you get a little more, on the book tour, you get a little more just setting description.
Yeah. The setting is the bus and then the things that happen on the bus. And then of course you'll get some of those, tropical places, Seaside, Florida, various bookstores along the way.
What is your writing process like? Do you write a certain number of hours a day? Do you have a special place where you work?
Well, yes and no. I have a tutor who comes to help my children, specifically with the language arts and math, 2 hours in the morning during the days of the week. So for 4 days out of the week, 4 out of the 7, I'll run, basically. The second I kind of hand off the kids to go do that, I run upstairs or I run to – I have a greenhouse outside that is set up like it's got a firewood stove and a table, and it's very cozy out there. And so I'll either go right there or I'll write upstairs anywhere at my desk or whatever. And I just race to write. My goal is to write generally 1,000 words a day, sometimes 2,000. And but then, of course, I'm also writing in the afternoon. The closer we get to deadline, I'm writing in the evenings, you know, later in the evenings and on the weekends and, you know, just making it happen as we get closer to a new deadline.
Mm. How do you squeeze your social media time out of that? Seems like a pretty busy day.
Yeah, no, it's always a busy day. I will say I'm so many years into social media that I have, I've got a talent manager. So I have a literary agent for my literary work. I have a talent manager for my social media side. So she handles, and their company handles, a lot of negotiations for contracts, blah, 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 getting all that stuff. And then as far as like my actual posting goes, I've done this so long that I have saved up truly 1,000 or more videos that are kind of ready to be piecemealed together. So when I'm actually making a post at this point, it's under a half an hour a day that I spend and just post it. It's ready to go. And then I have it set up with an app to automatically repost all over. So it might go to my TikTok and YouTube and, you know, Pinterest and wherever, but I'm not seeing it and it's automatic. So I had to learn all that stuff, how to do all
right,
of that.
Right.
So now I'm able to like reap the benefit of it being very, I mean, I can probably put a new post out in 5 minutes, you know, and be done for the day.
Wow. But how do you come up with ideas of what to post about that are actually interesting enough to attract more followers?
Gosh, I think having done it so many years, you get to the point where you know what works for you, right? And so for somebody new, what I would say, like someone just breaking into like, what should my niche be or whatever, I would say start making just try everything, right? There were times where I was dancing really badly, you know, like whatever, with the paper mustache. There's, you know, I made a fool out of myself trying everything under the sun, you know. I've done mommy humor. I've done construction information, how to build a house. I've done everything. I've tried it all, and I've tried it all long enough that then you start seeing, oh, well, this post did kind of well. Well, find the post that does the best and just change it a tiny bit and try it again. Change it a tiny bit. One thing that I have learned from social media is people do not, super successful accounts, they're expecting one thing only, right? If you're super successful with gardening, you do not need to reinvent the wheel. You make 7 seconds of a video with different music, showcasing, teaching specifically, and you can make 1,000 different videos all about gardening. And teach slow, boom, 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 over the time. And then you can repeat it with different styles. But no one's expecting you to do a million different things. If they follow you for that account, make it clear and stick to that. So for me, I'm a little bit against the mold because I'm embracing it, and it's okay at this point because I'm a motherhood farm, like lifestyle, I guess, you know. I'm going to tell you about my favorite finds or non-toxic living, sustainable, you know, crock pots or whatever, recipes. But I'm also talking about my life as an author. And so it's a unique mix. But I'm not willing to ever quit or drop the author part. And so eventually it's been fine. As long as you're, you know, doing it one every 5 posts, one every 6 posts, whatever. But eventually you just learn, you just work hard, and you'll eventually get educated enough to see, oh, I should do this. And of course, find some accounts that you love, that you aspire to. You're like, wow, this is, you know, let's say it's gardening. Oh, I love this gardening account. Well, see what they do and then change it and make it your own, you know, your own style, and go forth. You'll be shocked to see, learn from the success of others, you know.
But still, how to get people to see it in the first place?
Oh, I mean, if it's good, so people aren't going to, you can make a post today with 0 followers. Everybody has started with 0, right? Every successful influencer out there has started with zero. But what is hard to do is to be persistent and to be willing to look like a fool, to know that you're going to give out your worst, you know, like you're going to know some things and you're going to learn, you're going to make some posts and think, wow, it was really good. And you'll look back and be like, that was awful. But at least I did it. Just post it. And then you learn as you go. So, I mean, I can make a post, you know, from zero. I mean, all of us have. You make a post, and you start slow, and then eventually you gain up there. So what I did find to be very challenging, though, was to make a author-focused account. Mm. Because the reality to me is that even if I am an avid reader, I am not following those authors. Like, I'm just going to read their books. That's fine. That's fine for me. The people who are following those authors, now it's a little bit different now because I do think more people are getting into that. But a lot of librarians are very enthusiastic readers are reading those books. So for me, what I realized what I should do is just showcase my other life, because my target audience are people who buy milk at Target and have a normal life, and but then might walk past my book and say, oh, I recognize that. I'm going to get that because I think I follow that girl who gave me that random recipe. Mm. I'm going to go buy it. So that's my goal.
All right. You're listening to Writers' Voices. Our guest today is Melissa Ferguson, author of The Perfect Rom-Com. So back to your writing process. Do you start with character? Do you start with plot? Do you have the whole plot figured out before you start writing? Or are you more of just start with a seed of an idea and see where it goes?
Yeah, I always start with the concept of wouldn't it be funny if. That's where every book idea begins with. And that's when I know, oh, if I think, oh, wouldn't that be so funny if blah, blah, blah. Then I might take it to my outline. I have a template outline. And I basically, it starts with like a sentence. What would this book be about, right? A little synopsis, elevator pitch, and then maybe like two sentences. And then I would get into characters where I would say, okay, I always create characters beforehand, right? Their internal, external motivations, what they look like, their quirks, their fears. And then go through all, I probably have about 8 main characters like that. And then from there, I kind of know where I'm beginning. Wouldn't it be funny if, here's the premise. And I kind of have an idea of how I would like it to end, just generally. It can vary widely. But of course, in rom-com, they're getting together. Life is happy. I'm going to try looking up those. And then I just start writing.
All right. And are you a person who goes back and edits as you write, or do you get the whole first draft down and then start the editing process?
Yes. To be a good example, the first book I wrote took me 4 years and is unpublished. And I went back every day before I started writing more. I would go back a few pages. I'd edit. Now I write a book, you know, my contract is by the year. And I write a book in about, I don't know, 6 months, 9 months, maybe. And then it goes through, of course, a year and a half or a year of editing. But I go, you know, I only move forward. And I know I'll change things. So I make a review comment in the side. I'll highlight hey, go back and make this boyfriend X, Y, or Z. Or go back and make this scenario happen. And a lot of times it works itself out even by the time I reach the end of the book. So it's a very simple edit, if anything. So I'm always surprised by that.
Interesting. So Caroline, what are some of the things that you enjoyed about this book?
Well, I was interested to see how she reacted to Jack, the person that was what do you call him?
Well, the hero, I guess, anyway. Or the love interest, yeah.
She got really mad at him, and then they got back together again, which was interesting. I was hoping they would, and since it was a rom-com, I assumed that they were going to.
So how'd the title come about?
Well, given my experience with search engine optimization and seeing all this, you know, online stuff, I thought to myself, you know what people Google? What are the best rom-coms? What are the perfect all-time favorite rom-coms? And I thought, I even wrote around it. I made that a goal because I was like, I looked up other books that might have this title, found that there was shockingly an opening for this title, which is a really good title SEO-wise. And I said, and then I wrote that, you know, made that the thing where Amelia was saying, okay, you know, you better write the perfect, right? So it worked out. But I really did it because I want it to pop up as great rom-coms.
Oh, interesting. And of course, titles are not copyrightable. And so you can have the same title as another book.
Yes.
But yes, you probably would prefer not to, if possible. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, and especially for so at the same time, let's see, the rom-commers came out with Katherine Center. The rom-con, where he's doing a con or something, had come out. So it's also like, you know, I mean, people were getting, this is a good idea, you know, maybe
yes,
a theme, something
yes,
to put around.
So. Awesome. So do you have, what would be your, like, words of advice for an aspiring author?
It's exactly like this book. Get yourself the writer's conference as soon as you ever possibly think, wouldn't it be kind of fun to write a book? I wonder if I could. Just go ahead and go. Start early because there are so many workshops and proposals and workshops and how to learn about marketing. There's so much to writing that is beyond just writing, but also in commercial publishing, there are a lot of rules to it that you may not know that you would learn at conferences. So don't be afraid to get out there to a good writer's conference and learn and get connected and meet other people.
So if you'd gone to a conference first, you might not have written 145,000 word manuscript.
Right. I would not have 4 years writing that.
Well, exactly. It all worked out for you.
Yeah, you know, and I learned from it. So that's another thing, you know, just keep writing. People always, other authors kept saying that to me. I didn't really quite get it.
Yeah.
But just keep writing. Just keep writing the next book.
So, Caroline, do you have some closing words for us?
Yes, I do. Well, never give up on something just because of the time it will take to accomplish it. The time will pass anyway.
That is so true. It's going to pass one way or another.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Melissa. The Perfect Rom-Com was a really fun book to read. I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. And see you all next week on Writer's Voices.
Bye-bye, everybody.